Welcome to Reading to Kids podcast. I'm your host, Jenna.
And I'm your host, Peyton.
And we're here to read to you or with you. We know that sometimes moms and dads don't always have the time or the motivation to read to their kids each night, and we know how important it is. So, on those nights that you're not in the mood, we're going to do it for you.
Can't wait to read with you.
Good job, Peyton. High five. Ooh, chapter 4, right?
Ooh, I want to take a nap.
You're going to take a nap?
Technically it wouldn't be a nap. It would just be me sleeping.
But, like, we all take naps at night, kind of.
A nap is where you take a short time of sleep.
Yeah. We're going to take a long time of sleep, huh? Can you get this little baby muffin? But don't put her on the floor, that's sad. Just, like, pet her. You guys, I know I probably have said this before, but we have probably the cutest cat in the world. If anybody knows what a munchkin cat is, it is a cat that has short arms and legs, and she's like very short to the ground, and she is pure white. She's long hair and fluffy, and she walks like a little dwarf, and she has light green eyes. She is so cute. But we left out the best part. Right now, her body's shaved. So she looks like a poodle white munchkin cat. Because she gets mats. So in the winter, when her hair gets like super dense, buzz buzz. And guess what? It's not a professional job. No. I do it. Because it's like over $100. Don't forget to put that back. Yeah, so I do it.
Just
cracked
it
up. Okay. It's okay. All right, girls and boys. I think we only have girls that listen to us. Makes sense because we're girls. Right. All right. Queens of the Queen. Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Chapter 4. The Leaky Cauldron. Okay, do you remember what happened last night?
No.
He ran away. And the bus took him to meet that guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he's staying at the Leaky Cauldron. Okay.
It was really nice of them to get him all his
books. I know. Okay. It took Harry several days to get used to his strange new freedom. Never before had he been able to get up whenever he wanted or eat whatever he fancied. He could even go wherever he pleased as long as it was in Diagon Alley. And as this long cobbled street was packed with the most fascinating wizard shops in the world, Harry felt no desire to break his word to Fudge and stray back into the Muggle world. Harry ate breakfast each morning at the Leaky Cauldron, where he liked watching other guests, funny little witches from the country, up for a day's shopping. Venerable? What does that mean? I want to say vulnerable, but it's not. It's venerable. Okay. Venerable looking.
Voldemort.
No, it's vulnerable. Venerable looking wizards arguing over the latest article of Transfiguration today. Wildly looking warlocks, rashest dwarfs, and once what looks suspiciously like a hag who ordered a plate of raw livers from behind a thick woolen baklava. Oh, balaclava.
Barnacle.
Balaclava. After breakfast, Harry would go out to the backyard, take out his wand and tap the third brick from the left above the trash bin, and stand back as the archway into Diagon Alley opened into the wall. Harry spent the long, sunny days exploring the shops and eating under brightly colored umbrellas outside cafes where his fellow diners were showing one another their purchases. It's a lunoscope, old boy. No more messing around with moon charts, see? Or else discussing the case of Sirius Black. Personally, I won't let any of my children out of line when he's until he's back in Azkaban. Harry didn't have to do his homework under the blankets by flashlight anymore. No, he could sit in the bright sunshine outside Florian Fortescue's ice cream parlor, finishing all of his essays with occasional help from Florian Fortescue himself, who, apart from knowing a great deal about medieval witch burnings, gave Harry free sundaes every half an hour. Holy cow, that's a lot of ice cream. No, thank you. I think my stomach would hurt. What about you? Once Harry had refilled his money bag with gold galleons, silver sickles, and bronze nuts from his vault at Gringotts, he had to exercise a lot of self-control not to spend the whole lot at once. He had to keep reminding himself that if he had 5 years to go at Hogwarts, and how he would feel to ask the Dursleys for money for spell books, to stop himself from buying a handsome set of gold gobstones, a wizard game rather than like marbles. In the stones, they squirt nasty smelling liquid into the other player's face when they lose a point. He was sorely tempted to, but the perfect moving model of the galaxy in a large glass bowl, which would have meant he never had to take another astronomy lesson. But the thing that tested Harry's resolution most appeared at his favorite shop, Quality Quidditch Supplies, a week after he'd arrive at the Leaky Cauldron. Curious to know what the crowd in the shop was staring at, Harry edged his way inside and squeezed in among the excited witches and wizards until he glimpsed the newly erected podium on which was mounted the most magnificent broom he had ever seen in his life. "Just come out, prototype," a square-jawed wizard was telling his companion. "It's the fastest broom in the world, isn't it, Dad?" squeaked a boy younger than Harry, who was swinging off of his father's arm. "Irish International side just put an order in for 7 of these beauties," said the proprietor of the shop as he told the crowd, "and they're favorites for the World Cup." A large witch in front of Harry had moved, and he was able to read the sign next to the broom. The Firebolt. This state-of-the-art racing broom sports a streamlined, superfine handle of ash, treated with a diamond-hard polish and hand-numbered with its own registration number. Each individually selected birch twig in the broom tail has been honed to aerodynamic perfection, giving the Firebolt unsurpassable balance and pinpoint precision. The Firebolt has an acceleration of 150 miles an hour in 10 seconds and incorporates an unbreakable breaking charm. Price on request. Price on request? Harry didn't like to think how much gold Firebolt would cost. He had never wanted anything as much as this in his whole life. But he had never lost a Quidditch match on his Nimbus 2000. And what was the point in emptying his Gringotts vault for the Firebolt when he had a very good broom already? Harry didn't ask for the price, but he returned almost every day after that just to look at the Firebolt. They were, however, things that Harry needed to buy. He went to the apothecary to replenish his store of potions ingredients. That's right, apothecary. We have an apothecary, huh? Mm-hmm. And his school robes were now several inches too short in the arm and the legs. He visited Madame Malkin's robes for all occasions and bought new ones. Most important of all, he had to buy his new school books, which would include those for his two new subjects, Care of Magical Creatures and Divination. Divination. Harry got a surprise as he looked at the bookshop window. Instead of the usual display of gold embossed spellbooks the size of paving slabs, there was a large iron cage behind the glass that held out about 100 copies of the Monster Book of Monsters. Torn pages were flying everywhere as the books grappled with each other, locked together in furious wrestling matches and snapping aggressively. Hey, that's what Hagrid got him for his birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Harry pulled his book list out of his pocket and consulted it for the first time. The Monster Book of Monsters was listed on the required books for Care of Magical Creatures. Now Harry, interested by Hagrid, had said it would come in useful. He felt relieved. He had been wondering whether Hagrid wanted to help him with some terrifying new pet. As Harry entered Flourish and Blotts, the manager came hurrying towards him. "Hogwarts," he said abruptly, "come and get your new books." "Yes," Harry said. "Oh, get out of the way," he said the manager impatiently, brushing Harry aside. He drew a pair of very thick gloves, picked up the large, knobbly walking stick, and proceeded towards the door of the monster's books cage. "Hang on," Harry said quickly. "I've already got one of those." "Have you?" A look of the enormous relief spread over the manager's face. "Thank heavens for that. I've been bitten 5 times already this morning." A loud ripping noise rent the air. 2 of the monster books had seized a third and were pulling it apart. "Stop it! Stop it!" cried the manager, poking the walking stick through the bars and knocking the books apart. "I'm never stocking these again. It's a bedlam. I thought we'd seen the worst when we got the 200 copies of Inside Invisible Book of Invisibility. Cost a fortune, and we never even found them. Well, is there anything I can help you with?" "Yes," said Harry, looking down at his book list. "I need Unfogging the Future by Cassandra Vablotsky." "Ah, starting divination, are you?" said the manager, stripping his gloves and leading Harry to the back of the shop, where there was a corner devoted to fortune-telling. A small table stacked with volumes of Predicting the Unpredictable, Insulate Your Life Against Shocks and Broken Balls, When Fortunes Turn Foul. "Here you are," said the manager, who had climbed the sets of stairs to take down a thick black-bound book, Unfogging the Future, a very good guide to all of your basic fortune-telling methods, palmistry, crystal balls, bird and trails. But Harry wasn't listening. His eyes had fallen on another book, which was among the display on a small table, Death Omens, What to Do When You Know the Worst is Coming. "Oh, I wouldn't read that one if I were you," said the manager lightly, looking to see what Harry was staring at. "You'll start seeing death omens everywhere. It's enough to frighten anyone to death." But Harry continued to stare at the front of that cover of the book. It showed a black dog, large as a bear, with gleaming eyes. It looked oddly familiar. Uh-oh, maybe that was the thing he saw when he was picked up by the bus. The manager pressed Unfogging the Future into Harry's hands. "Anything else?" he said. "Yes," Harry said, tearing his eyes away from the dogs and dazed consulting his book list. "I need Intermediate Transfiguration and the Standard Book of Spells, Grade 3. Harry emerged from Flourish and Blotts 10 minutes later with his new books under his arms and made his way back to the Leaky Cauldron, hardly noticing where he was going and bumping into several people. He tramped up the stairs to his room, went inside, and tipped his books onto his bed. Somebody had been in to tidy. The windows were open and the sun was pouring inside. Harry could hear the buses rolling by in the unseen Muggle street behind him and the sound of the invisible crowd below Diagon Alley. He caught sight of himself in the mirror over the basin. It can't have been a death omen," he told his reflection defiantly. "I was panicking when I saw that thing on Magnolia Crescent. It was probably just a stray dog." He raised his hand automatically and then tried to make his hair lie flat. "You're fighting a losing battle there, dear," said his mirror in a wheezy voice. As the days slipped by, Harry started looking wherever he went for a sign of Ron and Hermione. Plenty of Hogwarts students were arriving in Diagon Alley now, with the start of term near. Harry met Seamus Finnegan and Dean Thomas, his fellow Gryffindors, and Quality Quidditch Supplies, where they too were ogling the firebolt. He also ran into the real Neville Longbottom, a round-faced, forgetful boy, outside of Flourish and Blotts. Harry didn't stop to chat. Neville appeared to have mislaid his book list and was being told off by his very formidable-looking grandmother. Harry hoped that she found out that he'd pretended. Harry hoped she'd never find out that he had pretended to be Neville while on the run from the Ministry of Magic. Harry woke on the last day of the holidays, thinking that this would be the at least he could meet Ron and Hermione tomorrow on Hogwarts Express. He got up, got dressed, and went for a last look of Firebolt, and was just wondering where he'd have lunch when someone yelled his name as he turned. Harry! Harry! There they were, both of them, sitting outside of Florian Fortescue's ice cream parlor. Ron looking incredibly freckly, and Hermione, very brown, both waving frantically at him. "Finally," Ron said, grinning at Harry as he sat down. "We went to the Leaky Cauldron, but they said that you'd left. And then we went to Flourish and Blotts and Madame Milkins and..." "Well, I got all my stuff last week," Harry explained. "And how come you knew I was staying at the Leaky Cauldron?" "Dad," Ron said simply. "Mr. Weasley, who worked for the Ministry of Magic, would of course have heard the whole story of what happened to Aunt Marge." "Did you really blow up your aunt, Harry?" Hermione said in a serious voice. "Well, I didn't mean to," Harry said, while Ron roared with laughter. "I just lost control." "It's not funny, Ron," said Hermione sharply. "Honestly, I'm amazed that you weren't expelled."
"So am I," said Harry.
"Forget expelled, though. I thought I was going to be arrested." He looked at Ron. "Your dad doesn't know why Fudge let me off, does he?"
Probably because it's you, isn't it?" shrugged Ron, still chuckling. "Famous Harry Potter and all that. I hate to see what the Ministry do to me if I blew up my aunt. Mind you, they'd have to dig me up first because Mom would have killed me. Anyways, you can ask Dad yourself this evening. We're staying at the Leaky Cauldron tonight, too, so you can come to King's Cross with us tomorrow. Hermione's there as well."
Hermione nodded, beaming. "Mom and Dad dropped me off this morning with my Hogwarts things."
"Ugh, excellent," Harry smiled happily.
"So, have you guys all got your new books and stuff?"
Look at this," Ron said, pulling out a long, thin box out of a bag and opening it.
"Brand new wand, 14 inches, willow, containing one unicorn tall hair. Oh, tail, sorry. One unicorn tail hair. And we've got all of our books." He pointed at a large bag under his chair.
"What about those monsters books, hey? The assistant nearly cried when we said we wanted two."
What was all that, Hermione?" Harry asked, pointing at not one but three bulging bags in the chair. "Bless you," next to her.
"Well, I'm taking more subjects than you, aren't I?" said Hermione.
"Those are my books for arithmancy, care of magical creatures, divination, study of ancient ruins, and muggle studies."
"What are you doing muggle studies for?" said Ron, rolling his eyes at Harry.
"You're a muggle born. Your mom and dad are muggles. You already know a lot about muggles."
"Yeah, but it'll be fascinating to study them from the wizarding point of view," said Hermione earnestly.
"Are you planning to eat or sleep at all this year, Hermione?" asked Harry, while Ron sniggered. Hermione ignored them.
"I've still got 10 galleons," she said, checking her purse.
"It's my birthday in September, and my mom and dad gave me some money to get myself an early birthday present."
"How about a nice book?" said Ron innocently.
"I don't think so," said Hermione, composed.
"I really want an owl. I mean, Harry's got Hedwig and you've got Errol."
"I haven't," Ron said. "Errol's a family owl. I've got Scabbers."
He pulled out his pet rat out of his pocket.
"And I want to get him checked. I want to get him checked over," he added, placing Scabbers on the table in front of them. "I don't think Egypt agrees with him." Scabbers was looking thinner than usual, and there was a definite droop in his whiskers.
"There's a magical creature shop right over there," said Harry.
"Who knew Diagon Alley very well? You could see if they've got anything for Scabbers there, and Hermione can get her owl."
"That's so cute. Hermione gets an owl?"
"Cool." So they paid for their ice cream and crossed the street to Magical Menagerie. There wasn't much room inside. Every inch of wall was hidden by cages. It was smelly and very noisy because the occupants of these cages were squeaking and squawking and jabbering or hissing. The witch behind the counter was already advising the wizard on the care of double-end newts, so that Harry, Ron, and Hermione waited, examining the cages. A pair of enormous purple toads sat gulping wetly and feasting on dead blowflies. A gigantic tortoise with a jewel-encrusted shell was glittering near the window. Poisonous orange snails were oozing up the side of the tank of the glass tank, and a fat white rabbit kept changing into a silk top hat and back again with a loud popping noise. There were cats in every color, a noisy cage of ravens, and a basket of funny custard-looking furballs were humming loudly on the counter, and a vast cage of sleek black rats that were playing some sort of skipping game using their long, bald tails. The double-ended newt wizard left, and Ron approached the counter. "It's my rat," he told the witch. He's been a bit off color ever since I brought him back from Egypt." "Bang him on the counter," said the witch, pulling a pair of heavy black spectacles out of her pocket. Ron lifted Scabbers out of his inside of his pocket and placed him next to the cage of his fellow rats, who stopped skipping their tricks and scuffed to the wire for a better look. Like nearly everything Ron owned, Scabbers the rat was secondhand. He had once belonged to Ron's brother Percy, and a bit battered. Next to the glossy rat in the cage, he looked especially woebegone. "Hmm," said the witch, picking up Scabbers. "How old is this rat?" "I don't know," said Ron. "Quite old. He's belonged to my brother." "Well, what powers does he have?" said the witch, examining Scabbers closely. The truth was that Scabbers had never shown any faintest trace of owning any powers. The witch's eyes moved from Scabbers' tattered left ear to his front paw, which had a toe missing, and tutted loudly. "Well, he's been through the mill, this one," she said. "He was like this when Percy gave him to me," said Ron defensively. "An ordinary common or garden rat like this can't be expected to live longer than 3 years or so," said the witch. "Now, if you're looking for something a bit more hard-wearing, you might want to look at one of these." She indicated the black rats, who promptly started skipping again. Ron muttered, "Show-offs." "Well, if you don't want a replacement, you can try this rat tonic," said the witch, reaching under the counter and bringing out a red small bottle. "Oh, okay," Ron said. "How much? Ouch!" Ron buckled as something huge and orange came soaring from the top of the highest cage and landed on his head, then propelled itself, spitting madly at Scabbers. "No cross hanks, no!" she cried the witch, but Scabbers shot from between her hands like a bar of soap, landed splay-legged on the floor, and then scampered for the door. "Scabbers!" Ron shouted, racing out of the shop after him. Harry followed. It took them nearly 10 minutes to catch Scabbers, who had taken refuge under a waste paper bin outside of the quality Quidditch supplies. Ron stuffed the trembling rat back into his pocket and straightened up, massaging his head. "What was that?" "Well, it was either a very big cat or a quite small tiger," said Harry. "Where's Hermione?" Probably getting her owl." They made their way back up to the crowded street on the magical menagerie. As they reached it, Hermione came out, but she wasn't carrying an owl. In her arms, clamped tightly around the enormous ginger cat. "Yep. You bought that monster?" said Ron, out of his mouth hanging open. "He's gorgeous, isn't he?" said Hermione, glowing. That was a matter of opinion, thought Harry. The cat's ginger fur was thick and fluffy, but it was definitely a bit bow-legged, and its face looked grumpy and oddly squished, as though it had run headlong into a brick wall. Now that Scabbers was out of sight, however, the cat was purring contently in Hermione's arms. "Hermione, that thing nearly scalped me," said Ron. "Well, he didn't mean to. to do you, Crossshanks. Oh, that's the name of the animal. Mm. He didn't mean to, did you, Crossshanks? Said Hermione. And what about Scabbers? Said Ron, pointing to that lump in his chest pocket. He needs rest and relaxation. How is he gonna get it with that thing around? Well, that reminds me, you forgot your rat tonic, said Hermione, slapping the small red bottle in Ron's hand. And stop worrying, Crossshanks. We'll be sleeping in my dormitory and Scabbers in yours. What is the problem? Poor Crossshanks, that witch said that he'd been there for ages and nobody wanted him. Well, I wonder why, Ron said sarcastically as they set off towards the leaky cauldron. They found Mr. Weasley sitting in the bar reading the Daily Prophet. Hurry, he said, smiling, looking up. How are you? Fine, thanks, said Harry, as he, Ron, and Hermione joined Mrs. Weasley with all of their shopping. Mr. Weasley put down his paper, and Harry saw the now familiar picture of Sirius Black staring up at him. They still haven't caught him then, he asked. Nope, said Mr. Weasley, looking extremely grave. They've pulled all of us out of our regular jobs at the ministry to find him, but no luck so far. Well, what would we get a reward if we caught him? Asked Ron. It'd be good to get some money. Oh, don't be ridiculous, Ron, said Mr. Weasley, who, on closer inspection, looked very restrained. Black's not going to be caught by a 13-year-old wizard. It's Azkaban's guards who's going to get him back. You mark my words. At that moment, Mrs. Weasley entered the bar, laden with shopping bags and followed by the twins, Fred and George, who were about to start their fifth year at Hogwarts, the newly elected head boy, Percy, and the Weasley's youngest child and only girl, Ginny. Jenny, who had always been very taken with Harry, seemed even more heartily embarrassed than usual when she saw him, perhaps because he had saved her life during the previous year at Hogwarts. She went very red and muttered, "Hello," without looking at him. Percy, however, held his hand out solemnly as though he and Harry had never met and said, "Harry, how nice to see you." "Hello, Percy," said Harry, trying not to laugh. "Oh, I hope you're well," said Percy, pompously, shaking hands. It was rather like being introduced to the mayor. "Very well, thanks." "Harry," said Fred, elbowing Percy out of the way and bowing deeply. "Simply splendid to see you, old boy." "Marvelous," said George, pushing Fred aside, seizing Harry's hand. "Absolutely spiffing." Percy scowled. "That's enough," said Mrs. Weasley. "Mom," said Fred, as though he just spotted her and seizing her hands too. "How really corking to see you." "Oh, I said that is enough," said Mrs. Weasley, depositing her shopping in an empty chair. Interesting, they call their like shopping bags their shopping. That's weird. "Hello, Harry, dear. I suppose you've heard our exciting news." She pointed at the brand new silver badge on Percy's chest. "Second head boy in the family," she said, swelling with pride. "At last," Fred muttered under his breath. "Well, I don't doubt that," Mrs. Weasley said, frowning suddenly. "I notice that they haven't made you two prefects." "What do you want me to be prefects for?" said George, looking revolted by that very idea. It'd take all the fun out of life. Ginny giggled. "You want to set a better example for your sister," snapped Mrs. Weasley. "Jenny's got other brothers to set examples for, mother," said Percy loftily. "I'm going to go change for dinner." He disappeared and George heaved a sigh. "Ugh, we tried to shut him in a pyramid, he told Harry, but Mom spotted us.
Dinner that night was a very enjoyable affair. Tom, the innkeeper, put the three tables together in the parlor, and when the seven Weasleys, Harry and Hermione, ate their way through five delicious courses. "How are we going to get to King's Cross tomorrow, Dad?" asked Fred as they dug into the sumptuous chocolate pudding. "The ministry's providing a couple of cars," said Mr. Weasley. Everyone looked up at him. "Why?" said Percy curiously. "Well, because it's you, Perse," said George seriously. "And there'll be little flags with hoods and HB on them. For,
I was going to say Harry Potter."
"No, for humongous big head," said Fred. Everyone except Percy and Mrs. Weasley snorted into their pudding. "Why are the ministries providing cars, Father?" Percy asked. Oh, gosh, he said father. Oh, my God. "Oy, oy, oy," Percy asked again in a dignified voice. "Well, as we haven't got any more," said Mr. Weasley, "and as I work there, they're doing me a favor." His voice was casual, but Harry couldn't help noticing that Mr. Weasley's ears had gone red, just like Ron's did when he was under pressure. "Good thing, too," said Miss Weasley briskly. "Did you realize how much luggage you've all got between you? A nice sight you'd be on a muggle underground. You're all packed, aren't you? Ron hasn't put all of his new things in his trunk yet," said Percy in a long, suffering voice. "He's dumped them on my bed." "Well, you'd better go and pack properly, Ron, because you won't have much time in the morning," Mrs. Weasley called down the table. Ron scowled at Percy. After dinner, everyone felt full and sleepy. One by one, they made their way upstairs to the rooms to check their things for the next day. Ron and Percy were next door to Harry. He had just closed and locked his own trunk when he heard angry voices through the wall and went to see what was going on. The door of number 12 was ajar, and Percy was shouting. It was here on the side of my bed. I took it off for polishing. I haven't touched it, all right," Ron roared back. "What's up?" said Harry. "My head boy badge is gone," said Percy, rounding on Harry. So is Scabbers rat tonic, said Ron, throwing the things out of his trunk to look. "I think I may have left it in the bar." "You're not going anywhere until you found my badge," yelled Percy. "Oh, I'll get Scabber stuff. I'm packed," said Harry. "Oh, I'll get Scabber stuff. I'm packed," said Harry to Ron, and he went downstairs. Harry was halfway along the passage to the bar, which was now very dark, when he heard another pair of angry voices coming from the parlor. A second later, he recognized them as Mr. and Mrs. Weasley's. He hesitated, not wanting them to know that he'd heard them arguing, when the sound of his own name made him stop, then move closer to the parlor door. "Makes no sense not to tell him," said Mr. Weasley, saying hastily. "Harry's got a right to know. I've tried to tell Fudge, but he insists on treating Harry like a child. He's 13 years old, and..." "Arthur, the truth would terrify him," said Mrs. Weasley shrewdly. "Do you really want to send Harry back to school with all that hanging over his head? For heaven's sake, he's happy not knowing." "Well, I don't want to make him miserable, and I want to put him on guard, retorted Mr. Weasley. "You know what Harry and Ron are like, wandering off by themselves. They've ended up in the Forbidden Forest. But Harry mustn't do that this year. When I think what could have happened to him the night he ran from home, if the night's bus hadn't picked him up, I'm prepared to bet that he would have been dead before the ministry found him."
"But he's not dead. He's fine. So what's the point?"
"Molly, they said Sirius Black is mad. And maybe he is. But he was clever enough to escape from Azkaban, and that's supposed to be impossible. It's been a month, and no one's seen hide nor hair of him. And I don't care what Fudge keeps telling the Daily Prophet, we are nowhere near catching Black than investigators, self-spelling wands. The only thing we know for sure is that what Black's after. But Harry will be perfectly safe at Hogwarts. We thought Azkaban was perfectly safe, but Black can break out of Azkaban. He can break into Hogwarts. But no one's really sure that Black's after Harry. Well, I guess he heard it, huh? Mm-hmm. There was a thud on wood, and Harry was sure that Mr. Weasley had banged his fist on the table. Molly, how many times do I have to tell you? They didn't report it in the press because Fudge wanted to keep it quiet. But Fudge went out to Azkaban the night Black escaped. The guards told Fudge that Black had been talking in his sleep for a while now. Always the same words. He's at Hogwarts. He's at Hogwarts. Black is deranged, Molly, and he wants Harry dead. If you ask me, he thinks murdering Harry will bring Unohu back to power. Black has lost everything the night that Harry stopped Unohu, and he has had 12 years alone in Azkaban to brood on it. There was a silence. Harry had leaned still closer to the door, desperate to hear more. Well, Arthur, you must do what you think is right, but you're forgetting Albus Dumbledore. I don't think anyone could hurt Harry at Hogwarts with Dumbledore as headmaster. I suppose he knows all about this. Of course he knows. We had to ask him if he minds the Azkaban guards stationing themselves around the entrance of the school grounds. He wasn't happy about it, but he agreed. Not happy? Why shouldn't he be happy if they're to catch Black? Dumbledore is not a fan of the Azkaban guards, said Mr. Weasley heavily. Nor am I, and if it comes to that. But when you're dealing with the wizards like Black, you sometimes have to join forces with those you'd rather avoid. Well, if they save Harry, well, then I will never say another word against them again, Mr. Weasley said wearily. It's late, Molly. We better go up. Harry heard chairs move, and as quietly as he could, he hurried down the passage to the bar and out of sight. The parlor door opened, and a few seconds later, footsteps told him that Mr. and Mrs. Weasley were climbing the stairs. The bottle of rat tonic was lying under the table that they had sat at earlier. Harry waited until he heard Mr. and Mrs. Weasley's bedroom doors close. Then he headed back upstairs with the bottle. Fred and George were crouching in the shadows on the landing. No kitty. And the landing heaving with laughter as they listened to Percy dismantling his and Ron's room in search of his badge. We've got it, Fred whispered to Harry. We've been improving it. The badge now read Big Head Boy. That's funny. Harry forced a laugh. Went to give Ron the rat tonic, then shut himself in the room and lie in his bed. So Sirius Black was after him. That explained everything. Fudge had been lenient with him because he was so relieved to find him alive. He made Harry a promise to stay at the Diagon Alley, where there were plenty of wizards to keep an eye on him, and he was sending two ministry cars to take them to the station tomorrow so that the Weasleys could look after Harry until he was on a train. Harry listened to the muffled shouting next door and wondered why he didn't feel more scared. Sirius Black had murdered 13 people with one curse. Mr. and Mrs. Weasley were obviously thought that Harry would be panic-stricken if he knew the truth. But Harry happened to agree wholeheartedly with Miss Weasley that the safest place on earth was wherever Albus Dumbledore happened to be. Didn't people always say that Dumbledore was the only person that Lord Voldemort had ever been afraid of? Surely Black, as Voldemort's right-hand man, would be just as frightened of him. And then there were these Azkaban guards that everyone kept talking about. They seemed to scare most people senseless, and if they were stationed all around the school, Black's chances of getting inside seemed very remote. All in all, the thing that bothered Harry most was the fact that his chances of visiting Hogsmeade now looked like zero. Nobody would want Harry to leave the safety of the castle until Black was caught. In fact, Harry suspected his every move would be carefully watched until the danger had passed. He scowled at the dark ceiling. Did they think that he couldn't look after himself? He'd escaped Lord Voldemort's 3 times. He wasn't completely useless. Unbidden, the image of the beast of the shadows of Magnolia Crescent crossed his mind. What to do when you know the worst is coming? I'm not going to be murdered, Harry said out loud. That's the spirit, dear, his mirror said sleepily. That's so cool that their reflections talk back to them. And Peyton didn't respond because she's asleep. That's all right. Okay. Cool. Very cool. Cool, cool, cool. All right. Good night, guys. If you loved this podcast episode, do us a favor. What can they do, Pei?
Leave us a review.
Or you could tell a friend.
Or give us 5 stars.
That's right. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening.